relationship, and she sort of knew that it was going to be trouble for me, I guess. So she started to take me to people who had this idea that you could use relationships to transcend. Yeah, it's a good way to keep you in something you really may not want to be in, because you think it's going to take you to a spiritual level. So I think she was hoping that was the case. So we saw these people, and then we saw this one guy, and we signed up for a day seminar, like $150, for like 6 hours, half of this price, or more, double this thing, I think, or more. And so we were supposed to see this guy, so we went there, and when we got there, the first thing we did was an hour sitting quietly. And then when we came out of it, they had announcements for about 15 minutes. Then they said, well, we're going to have a break. I still haven't seen the guy I was going to see. And so we went on the break, and it was just nice. We hung out, we came back, and then we meditated again for 15 minutes or something like that. And then I don't think I saw the guy till like 2 in the afternoon. Yeah, he came in for like 10 minutes, and then he left again, and then we did another hour, and I basically just could have stayed home, really. You know what I mean? So at the second break, I went up, and I asked for my money back, and I said, I paid to see this guy. I've only seen him for 10 minutes, and I've been here. I like meditating with you all, but, I mean, I shouldn't have to pay $150 for that privilege, you know? So they gave me my money back. So I've always looked at spirituality as an incredible business in some respects, because they never have to deliver the goods now, because they may be able to put it off for lifetimes. Yeah, in other words, you're gonna sow and till the soil of spirituality, and you may not get any harvest for lifetimes. You may have to go through lifetimes of purification. And what an incredible guarantee to bind the customer with the idea. It's like if it was a factory, it would have been shut down. It's not producing the goods at all. So, today I'm confronted with 5 hours. And it'd be really good to have a lot of filler, you know. We'll take a long lunch, that's for sure. Because what I'm doing is I'm just a deliverer of a message. I felt like I delivered it pretty succinctly the last 2 nights. And then, I mean, that's the exploration really is on you. The whole point is to offer you a possibility, hopefully with a hand of certainty, yeah, so that the mind could, because the mind's ability to entertain is really going to be based on what it's entertaining. So, and in self-centeredness, the mind, I found in my own life, it never came to this point that I'm not that. It was always starting from the point that I am this, and this is really, something's really wrong with it, and I better do a lot of stuff to try to make it better. Yeah, and that was like the basic frame of everything. And no matter what I came in contact with, it was measured and cut and pasted to fit that frame. Not to dismiss the frame, but to try to fit the frame that my mind was in. And after a period of time of that, when I heard this message, I realized that was what had been going on. Yeah, I was trying to fit everything into into a special something, me. Yeah. And what happens in that translation, you lose something out of everything, which is the everythingness of it. You know what I mean? You totally manipulate its only true value and make it something. Which is going to have to fail you so that you give up the drive for something and you finally rest in everything. Yeah. Or the first introduction to everything is nothing, really, to me. It's both. But the first introduction is nothing, and then that's everything. Yeah. So, you know, that's why I like doing one talk at night. I'm always complaining to Rob about this, but I keep showing up and doing it. But, I mean, it builds a nice space. It really does. And we usually on Sunday, we're all intoxicated. Some of us are anyway. And that's fine. I like intoxication. You know? But the idea that something may be producing something, yeah, and then if I had more of it, it would produce more of it. It's got to be dismissed. This is like a spontaneous, timeless event, yeah? it's always available at all times because that's what timelessness is. It's not based on time, so it's never not going to be here. But the timelessness, and what's going to entertain the timelessness in and of itself is timeless. Yeah. Now we're receiving it through a mail slot of time, and then in one sense, it may be time that's trying to entertain timelessness. So in the time view, more seems to lead to that. Yeah. If I do more, if I get more, if I study more, if I meditate more, that more time I spend on it, that will lead to the timelessness. I found that not to be so. It can appear to be so in some people's lives, but in other people's lives, it doesn't appear to be so at all. So in fact, it doesn't have its own so-ness. It's given the so-ness by the mind that's practicing. Yeah. So I find, like in the Course in Miracles, they would say, have you ever heard of the Course in Miracles? It's an interesting book. It was like a sort of a download in some psychiatrist's head. A woman's head is in the 70s. And one of her colleagues transcribed it as she was speaking it. And it proclaimed to be the mind of Jesus of Christ, yeah, of Nazareth. You know, it's a pretty, pretty big statement. So in that Course in Miracles, it talks about, if you're reading this course, it may be that your mind wants to save time, because that's what the course will do. It'll save you time. And it describes that a life of contemplation will eventually lead to success, because if it's the mind's intention to be free, it can take the slow road, the slow train. Yeah, and it may like to do that. A life of karmic yoga, you know, doing good actions will lead to the same event, and meditation and all like this, or prayer. But if you may just want to go faster, the mind, and this may be a quicker vehicle, because all of the paths, if they're worth their salt, will lead you to a position of I need do nothing. Really, that's the name of the chapter in the Course in Miracles. It's lovely that you're going to end up at night at I need do nothing. And so the course basically starts at I need do nothing. And in that starting in at I need do nothing, what does it do? It saves a lot of time. So you're going to acquire a lot of things, and then they're probably going to really disappoint you. Yeah? And then you realize you're left with nothing. So we're starting with nothing to begin with. Yeah? So, and out of, let's say, embracing nothing, you'll get a whole lot of something out of the nothing. But if you embrace a lot of somethings, you'll probably get nothing. Yeah? So it's a different, it's just a different sort of way, but it saves time. A lot of time. I mean, a huge amount of time. This whole idea of purification taking ages and all like that is dismissed, because mind is unsullied by anything that's appearing in it. Yeah? The mind isn't affected by your defects. Yeah. It can affect the conditional mind that you believe you are, but it can't affect mind. Yeah? That's why the solution is absolute in the recognition that the problem is imaginary. Yeah? That's the only way everything works. Is when you see the problem from the solution, one of the first things that downloads is that the problem isn't real. Yeah, it's appearing to be real, but in fact, the only way it can appear to be real, it must be appearing to be real to what's real, yeah, which is you and I, but not as you and I, yeah? So the only thing this place can, the only thing that can give this place the meaning of being real is what's real, yeah? That's the only thing. Falsehood cannot give itself the meaning of reality. It has no freaking idea what reality is, in a sense, yeah? So it can't gather that in its own knowledge, because it doesn't have the knowledge. It's false. But false evidence can appear real to you and me, because we are the reality. Yeah? We are, like St. Francis says, we are what's looking, and that's what the you is looking for. Yeah? The you, what's looking, is what you are looking for. It is one of the most succinct statements, which will save you a lot of freaking time. It will even save you time in reading it, because it takes 2 seconds. It's half a sentence. You know, what's looking is what you're looking for, and then the mind goes and entertains it. Yeah. Now, if it would say, like, we were going to write a book, and we've never been successful at it, and what we were going to do is we'd have, let's say, an important statement, And then we were going to say, as a footnote, for more clarification, go to page 67. And then the people would, you know, avidly go to 67. There'd be nothing there. And we'd use it about five times until they figured it out. You know what I mean? Oh, this report. All right, more clarification on 223. Oh, nothing. Oh, yeah, that's it. You're the clarifying. You know, there's a point that what is the clarifying quality may need some clarification, but it doesn't go on ad nauseum. A little bit of clarification wakes up the fact that there's clarity. Yeah? At that point, everything becomes clear. You may like to enjoy it, but you don't need another reminder because it's kicked in. Yeah? You know? It's like that thing. If you keep pouring the gas in the stalled car, it's gonna flood. It's not gonna start. All you need is a couple drops, and then if it catches, then it can drive. That's the whole point, isn't it? It's not getting more gas. It's that you want to drive. Yeah. As soon as that's connected, and that's a possibility, then drive. You know what I mean? Then live. Not live to seek clarification, but live in clarity. Yeah? What's the point? You can't become more and more clear. It can appear to be the case, but the reservoir where that clarity is already completely full. Yeah? You may be accessing and thinking you can access more, but you're not adding on to clarity. So that's why I have difficulty sometimes, like going through a marathon of talking, because it's like hitting a dead horse after a while. You know what I mean? It sort of gets pointless, whacking it. It's dead. Now the time to do is to get up and go to a live horse. You know, you're dead, dead, dead. You don't have to keep hitting it. It's dead. You just get up and jump on a live one. Yeah. You don't have to read. The horse is dead, the horse is dead, the horse is dead. You know the horse is dead. You know the system that the mind has been relying on has failed. Look at our lives. Yeah. And how can a failed system be successful in its failure? It must get that success from you and I, from our mind. Our mind must give the meaning to that system for it to be successfully failing. Yeah? How could it manifest what it has in our lives unless what was so was giving it that meaning? How could it? Yeah. How could a failness produce such a level of success on the level of failness? Yeah. Really, I reached incredible, exquisite levels of being screwed. You know what I mean? Something that's screwed could never have done that. Something that's true, taking something that's screwed as true, could produce it. It easily could produce that effect. Yeah, it could make something out of nothing. Yeah, but not that isn't going to produce a success and failure. It's failed. But what is truly so, if it takes that to be so, can live as if it's not so, and it will seem as real can be, not because it's real, but because you're real. You're giving it the meaning it has. You take the statement in the Course in Miracles, lesson 2. You and I are giving everything all the meaning it has. Another statement. You're the dreamer of the dream. So the dreamt tiger can have a real effect on you because you're taking it to be so. Not because it's so. It's a dreamt tiger. But it can produce an effect on you if you believe it's so. Because you're what's so. And we're lending our what-so-ness to a lot of different freaking things. Yeah. To the body, to this and that, all day. And it seems as real can be, doesn't it? It seems like there's a body over there, and there's a body here, and there's this big gulf that I call, I don't know, nothing. You know, I pay no attention to this, which is everything, and I concentrate on that thing because I'm a thing. Yeah. So I assume she's got the same qualities I have as a thing. Yeah? And in that pursuit of looking from thing to thing to get a sense of no thing, which is pointless, yeah, I forget, seemingly, no thingness. I can't do it forever, but I can do it for a stretch of time called a lifetime. You can do it for 70 years, 80 years. That's why time is here. This magical trick couldn't be performed in eternity. It has to be under the guise of time. Yeah? Because it's a sleight of hand. If timelessness drops in, you see the joke. You see the magic trick. If it doesn't, the magic trick produces you seeing from it. Yeah? No, nothing has reality unless it's let reality from what is real. Nothing has reality unless it's let reality from what is real. Yeah. And we do that through dreaming, in a way. Like the Course says, you and I are the dreamer of this dream. We forgot that we're dreaming it. And in the forgetting that we're dreaming it, we've given everything we've dreamt, the power to affect us. What power is that thing using to affect us? Our own. It doesn't have any power. It's not so. Yeah. How can something that's inherently empty, like Buddhism says, if you ever study Buddhism, one of the biggest principles of Buddhism is emptiness. What is emptiness? It's empty of any inherent value. It has no ability to affect unless the cause takes it to be a cause. Yeah. This is like truly becoming responsible, not in an egotistic way, but in just the way things are. I saw some incredible results in recovery. In recovery, we have this thing, because most people in recovery are blaming everyone else for what's happened to them. Yeah, the police, the family, this and that, their girlfriends, all like that. Yeah, throwing it off of them all day. And AA, finally, you start growing up, and we use this thing called an inventory process to look at what our role was in everything. Whoo! Unbelievable. I'm an innocent bystander who's just been screwed with constantly. You know what I mean? I've been in 20 relationships that have failed. I never realized the one constant in all those 20 relationships was me. It was like, just went over my head. I just ran into 20 really different girls that did the exact same thing to me. It's amazing. No, you know? So, and then we do this inventory where it says, okay, we're going to look at, it's a beautiful, it doesn't matter if you're in recovery or not. There is a lot of nuggets in recovery. I mean, there was a divine download in this guy named Bill Wilson's head in 1935. And suddenly, something that had no solution since early ages, there was a solution to, which was alcoholism. It's a pretty damn amazing event. Yeah? Before 1935, people like me were lobotomized. They were put up in attics and, you know, don't go up. Uncle Fred's not feeling good today, you know. They were in jail, sanitariums. They didn't know why. I read in the Old Testament Psalms, they're talking about winos and how, what can we do with them? You know what I mean? They're just like tornadoes running through everyone's lives, yeah. 1935, this man gets a download. And something happens, and a possibility finally shows up here for relief from alcoholism. And now it's been going on for 70-something years. So what they do is they introduce this process called taking an inventory to look at your role in things. Not your parents' roles and everything, but yours. Just to see how you participated in this situation. And they state, before they get into it, they have a beautiful statement. They say, being convinced, which means to believe with certainty. It's a very powerful statement. Being convinced that self, yeah, this idea I call it selfing, manifested in a lot of different ways, so you may not be able to recognize what's behind the screen of all the, you know, finger things. Yeah, manifested in many ways is what has defeated us. It's a beautiful statement because in this statement, it's separating you from self. Yeah? So self is sort of like a foreign installment, and how it, and through its manifestations, a lot of manifestations, it defeats you in this thing called life. Yeah. Now, if we're clear that that's what's going on, let's look at some of its common manifestations. Not your manifestations, self's. Yeah. It's a mental process, like a parasitical movement, and it has characteristics. Not an infinite amount of characteristics, a set amount of characteristics. And everyone who suffers under its tyranny demonstrates the same characteristics. And every time they demonstrate them, they call it theirs, their characteristics, which is called the act of being identified as something you're not. That's the root of the problem. Yeah. So here, says being convinced that self manifests in various ways is what has defeated us, we'll look at some of its common manifestations. Okay, what are they? And the next paragraph goes, resentment is the first one, and it kills more alcoholics than anything else. Okay, then it gets a couple paragraphs later, it's fear. And then another one, it says, harms done to others in the pursuit of what you want. And let's look at the sexual arena, because desires abound there. Okay, so now, it's a four-column thing. You take an inventory, you write down, well, who was I mad at and am I mad at? Why? Which everyone at any bar today is doing those two columns. They know why they're mad and who they're mad at. But it's not leading to any relief. It's leading to another drink, right? But AA takes it from there and puts it on us at the end. It says, what was your role in it? Where were you selfish, self-seeking and frightened, inconsiderate and dishonest? Yeah. And there's an amazing relief just from shifting it from who the hell's screwing with me, and I know why, to what was my role in it? Yeah. Could you imagine if you took it back even farther and see the real role you actually have here, that you and I are giving everything all the meaning it has? Could you imagine if you got a little relief from that event called just a written inventory, and that relief became stabilized? Could you imagine the quantum leap that would occur if you realize that it's you, in a sense, that's allowing all these meanings to be given to things, and then those things are biting you with the meaning you gave them? Yeah. I think that would be a rude awakening. And in that rude awakening, it would lead to something. First of all, the act of blaming would stop, because you'd realize you're in totally cahoots with everything here. Yeah, everything is seemingly the way it is because the way you seemingly are. So if I'm not feeling good one day, this is a drag. If you were close to it, would be. Or, you know, nose-wise. If I'm feeling good, it's not a drag, and then if I'm feeling bad, it's a drag again. How does it have any inherent nature? Is it a drag or isn't it a drag? It can appear to be both. To who? To me. I can make it real, and I can make it unreal. It happens in 5 minutes during a day. Something is really bothering you, then it's not. How much bothering did it have? Yeah, it didn't have any bothering. It was given that power, that potential, from where you are, not from where it is. It's finally getting the horse in front of the cart, instead of having the horse behind the cart, constantly trying to push it up a hill with no vision. You got the horse in front of the cart. There's clear seeing. Yeah. That's why there's this thing, neti neti, in Hinduism. It's not this, not that. So in negation, you go, not this, not that, not this. You know, you negate every reality until you're left with the only reality that's giving everything the meaning of being real. Yeah? It always going to end up right where you began. Yeah? This is where it is. Yeah? So you can say, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. Or you can just go, not this, not this, and get the whole picture. You don't need to go through everything and not this, not this. You may have to go through a few, and then the mind gets it and opens up. And then you realize, not this. Yeah? And then in seeing what you're not, you get a sense of what you are, which is the seeing. Yeah, not the seer. Because the seer has physical characteristics. It's swayed by the currents of duality all day. You're feeling good, you're not feeling good. And so then you try to depend, you're trying to stabilize this constantly moving bowl of water on this mental stability called you, yet you're feeling different all the time. Yes? Yeah? It doesn't make sense, and it doesn't work, and you don't freaking really believe it. Yeah? And when the shit hits the fan, you'll be stuck in that hallway of shit and fans. You won't be seeing how the shit aligns with the fan, what turns the fan on. You'll be seeing it after it hits you in the face. It's a little late then, yes? Then you're on the level of skillful means. You're about just cleaning up the mess all your life. This is something different, totally different. It's if there's a slight entertaining of something that isn't so, yeah, just a slight little miscalculation right at the beginning, if it's given time and space, it can geometrically progress and seem realer and realer and realer. To try to deal with it then is ridiculous. It's got too much of the reality that you gave it. Yeah, you want to go back to from where the reality was distributed to it. Yeah, and tell the truth about that. Yes, and in that point, then the distribution lines dry up, and now you see, like the Buddhists say, you see things as inherently empty because they're empty of the reality. Yeah, you have given them all the meaning they have. And now that has stopped, and now you're giving reality the meaning of reality. And that's an incredible match in heaven. Boom! You know how things can seem so real and they're not? Can you imagine what is real? Well, how it will seem so real if you believe it to be so? It's a perfect combination. Then it's just not because it's already so, but now it can actualize into your life. Yeah, because you allow it to be so, because you're allowing it to be so. You're not busily making it not so, with the hopes that one day it will be so, or beating yourself up because it was once so and I've lost it. No, you're allowing what's so to finally be what's so. And it's going to express itself in your life. And like the Course in Miracles says, you and I are going to dream ourselves out of this dream, and while we're doing it, the dream will get happier. And everyone I know who's been entertaining this possibility in the circles that I run in, it seems to have been working. It doesn't mean it's going to change the geography of your life, but I see my girlfriend travel through cancer unbelievably light. And she had no spiritual training, one bit. She has no interest in spirit. She had interest in me, came to the meetings, and she got infected. Yeah. And now she comes to me sometimes on tours, and she can't believe the spiritual suffering. How people are making something so simple, so complex. And they've logged so many more hours than she's ever logged, going to meetings and meditating. She's never done a damn thing like that. She travels, she's more stable than most people I meet at these meetings. Yeah? Because her mind got it. Yeah? And it stayed in the simplicity. Yeah, it wasn't a topic that she was interested in, so the mind didn't start making it anything. It allowed it to stay what it was, nothing for a while, and it made a big impression on her. And I've seen her go through shit, and she's traveled damn well light in that. What more do you want? It's not like you're taking your reality back. It just gets discharged from it all. And then it goes back into resting and entertaining what's real. Yeah? And it stabilizes, and it becomes a stable way of traveling lighter throughout your days, every day. No special days. This isn't a special day. I feel just the exact same before the talk, during the talk, and after the talk. Yeah. There's more a presence of a body before and after the talk. While I'm in the talk, there's no body. But other than that, it's the same all the time. I haven't been able to harvest a memory out of most of my life for years now. I can't get many. Surfing, maybe. That's about it. I can't just... Because if you're really all there, then you can only be where you are, which is here. And that isn't happening anymore. Yeah. I'm not looking at mental shop, you know, photoshops of photos of what was, because what here is too entertaining. It's too interesting. Yeah. To explore the infinite in this moment is so much better than to have a finite linear story of you. Because that's going to come to a rude ending. You're going to die, seemingly. But this continues on and on and on. See, if you see what you're not, it negates the drive to start to see what you think you are. It stops there. And what you are is the seeing of what you're not. The dualistic unfolding doesn't occur. You stop that whole process of, oh, now I've realized what I'm not, I'm going to realize what I am. Realizing what you're not is what you are. That's it. That's what you are, is that ability to realize what you're not. What else could? What else could realize what it's not but what you are? What else could realize it? You're already home. There's no need to start looking for a mythical idea of what you think you are from all the readings you've done and all this stuff. You're right there. And the hit is that when you sense that being right there, it's like it's always been that way. And in a weird way, nothing actually has ever happened, at least to displace or to move that center. Nothing. Yeah. And then you realize if nothing's ever happened, then nothing has any ability to make anything ever happen. Exactly. And then you're resting in what's always happening, which is very rarely noticed. Because why? It's always happening. We only recognize usually things that come and go. We don't see what's always here. That's not the way our perceptions are built. Yeah, we want to recognize a thing in space, but we very rarely see the space. Like you could sit out a window and you could count all the birds that flew by, but how could you count the space? It never went anywhere. Yeah. Which allowed all the birds to fly. Without the space, where would the birds appear? Yeah. All their movements are, the ability to have that movement is in the space that they're in. That space never moves one iota. Where would it move into? More space. Where would it move from? Space. How could you tell the difference? A previous space, a future space, and now this space? It's all the same. You know what I mean? There's no future and past space. Oh, I think I've recognized that space before. Yeah, it's the only space there is. That's why you recognize it. You don't have to remember anything that's always here. It's pointless. You only remember things that aren't here. Right? That's how the mind keeps generating the idea of being a self. It's remembered. Self has no source to come out of other than remembrance from the mind. If the mind stops remembering, that's why a lot of, like St. Francis, and there's a great Zen master called Dogen, a Japanese Zen master, that said, to study Buddhism is to study the self. And to study the self is to forget the self. Yeah? And then St. Francis says it's in self-forgetting that you're, whatever. So why is forgetting emphasized quite a lot? Because the self is remembered. Yeah? You don't have to vanquish the self and extinguish the self and kill the self. Or forgetting does more than enough because it's a remembered quality. It's a remembered sense. Yeah? It's not a natural state. It's a remembered sense. So if the engagement with the mental activity that's remembering it is broken by doing something you love, or you get into an accident, or an epiphany occurs, yeah, that whole thing, what happens is the real status of what's so is the space of absence of self. Because the remembrance stops, and then you're seemingly free. You are free. Now, when the sense of self is remembered again, it claims to be the one that had the experience of freedom, which now just further binds you and opens you up to exquisite suffering, because there's nothing like the absence of enlightenment if you feel like you had an experience of it. It's sort of like, to me, the idea of hell was you knew God and now you have no recourse in knowing God again. That would be hell. But there would be no hell unless you had the real sense of what God or heaven was like. That would be the juiciest hell, that you still had the sense of that heaven, yet you'd never have the ability to ever go there again. That would be hell. Yeah? But hell, in a way, some people view this as hell. But we're all in it, so it seems like we're trying to make a little heaven out of it. Yeah? We don't recognize how fucking crazy it is, because we're all crazy. Yeah? It's like people on a boat, everyone has a big load of shit in their pants. It smells to high heaven, but everyone's afraid to mention it because, what the hell? So everyone knows, it's a lovely bouquet-filled day. No, it stinks. You know what I mean? It stinks. So a lot of views call this place hell. Yeah. The seeming separation from what we are is pretty hellish. Look at what it allows to occur. Without that Petri dish, where would all this longing arise from? Where would the old, how, without clarity, how could someone have such a depression unless there was a clear mind entertaining it? You know, I've heard people describe their depression with such clarity, like a scalpel. Yeah, and yet supposedly one of the main qualities of depression is confusion. But their description of it is not confused at all, because the clarity of mind never goes anywhere. Yeah, it's what's making that event so exquisitely terrible. The event is, and he can't conjure up that quality. You do. It's not the movie, it's the audience. Yeah. The movie isn't that good, really. But the audience can make it a fucking blockbuster. I've seen it. I get calls a lot. Usually melodramas. For me, it was prison melodramas and hospital melodramas. But usually the movie turns sour. Yeah? And then the sourness, it's sort of like the head. When you're having a good day, how long does your head allow that to continue? It starts questioning, right? I don't deserve this. Somebody's going to find out I'm a fraud, whatever. But if you're having the same head, if it's having a bad day, it goes, it's going to last forever. Mm-hmm. You want to live underneath that? Oh. It's going to shorten and minimize all that's good and maximize all the impossibility of everything being bad. Do you want to live under that every freaking day? You don't see that as a form of slavery? When I saw that, it was such a simple, I didn't need 800 examples. That's how my mind works. When things were great, it got really nervous. When things sucked, it said it was going to be forever. Fuck. It wasn't like a one day like theme. That was the theme of the whole movie. To go on and on under that theme and have it play out, you know, segment after segment, it's not a 2-hour movie that I can get out of. It's what I call my life. It's going to be 80 years of it. And all I'm going to get out of it is being right and freaking incredibly bummed out and alone, probably. Yeah. What a bonanza, just to be special and unique. I'd rather be like a cameo performance in a great movie than to be a star of a D movie. Yeah. I would. Just to put me in a Cecil DeMille production than, you know, a character study for 80 years. there is a solution. From the solution's point of view, there is no problem. And if that's true, then there is no need for a solution. And that's the ultimate solution. Nothing has gone totally wrong that you have to correct, other than the meaning that's been given to it. Yeah. So I wanted to read a little bit of this. This is one of my favorite things. Faith Mind, do you ever hear it? I do it every year because I got to fill time. This is called Faith Mind. It's something that was written, supposedly, who knows, by the third patriarch of Zen. It's a beautiful, succinct description of mind. It's only about 4 pages, so I'll read it. So it starts with this. And you know the word Tao. The Tao means the way. So the great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. So in a way, if you read this in an opposite, if this was like a positive and they turned it into a negative, it would say that when love and hate arise, everything would be unclear and disguised. See the power that we are? Obviously, in the way, everything is clear and undisguised, but in our life, it can seem to be unclear and disguised. It really rests on us. It doesn't rest on the way. The way is the way, but it's not approached by your way or my way. Yeah. So if you see it in the negative, when neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. So when love and hate arise, all would be unclear and disguised. Yeah. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. Yeah. If you wish to know the truth, then hold to no opinions for or against anything. Obviously, then it's the opinions that can disguise the truth. If you wish to know the truth, then hold to no opinions for or against anything. How the hell are you going to do that? Yeah? If that's all you are, you're a split mind, and of course it's got, all your life is for and against. How the hell are you going to do it? You're not. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, which is they're empty, yeah? The mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. So now the dreamer has given something it's dreamt the power to affect us, and now the things it's dreaming are causing it to be agitated. Yeah? To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, so what happens if the fundamental nature of thing is recognized? Find out. Yeah? Find out. You could stop right there, and then you'd be the living scripture. You would write your own stanzas in your life. Yeah? You would write your own stanzas. This isn't a dissertation. It's an invitation. It's a message. Yeah? That's why it's so tiny, so succinct. It's not beating a horse till it's dead. It's just telling you you're not on the horse, let's say. Yeah. So here, the way is, so when the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way, so it just gets disturbed and disturbed and disturbed. It's not leading to any point. It's just agitation begetting agitation and more agitation and more agitation. And if it comes upon the idea of peace, it will use peace to agitate itself. If it comes upon the idea of enlightenment, it will use enlightenment to agitate itself. Yes? It won't get any essential nature from anything. It will put its conditional nature onto that thing. So enlightenment is promising absolute peace, equanimity, yet you're entertaining, it's driving you freaking crazy. Your mind's agitated as hell. If you don't meditate 3 hours a day, you think the day is going to be terrible. We're all fucking playing God, and we're using the word enlightenment because it means a whole lot for some of us, yeah? And the more it means, the more it's going to be used, probably for the exact opposite point that the word enlightenment is there. Sort of like peace. Like people, where I live, it's a very rich. And so people, the idea of having a house is to have security, you know, and then you expect if it was nice and you're living there quite a lot, it would make you happy. Yet they're ready to purchase their fourth house, but it's driving them crazy. The symbol is that it means security and peace, but the actuality of the mind entertaining it is agitating it unbelievably. Yeah, it's insane. I saw a guy came over my house, he got $250,000 inheritance. And he was complaining about all the bad shit it's going to bring about. My friends may not like me anymore. And I said, well, then kick down. Give me $70,000. I'll enjoy it right today. I swear to God, I couldn't believe it. Why are you going on? It's a boom. You know what I mean? It's a blessing. You know, appreciate it. That's what happens. Yeah. Agitation will beget agitation. With whatever the meaning that thing has for you, incredible internal peace, you won't have internal peace entertaining it from the split mind. It'll be used to produce more agitation. The way is perfect, as vast space is perfect. Use the idea of a clear sky to represent, to get a certain sense of what mind is like, you know? As vast space, it's just as perfect as that. In other words, it allows everything to appear in it, yet it isn't affected by anything that appears in it. Yeah? That's what mind is, stainless, infinite steel, never touched by what it's holding. It's like a bowl. Every bowl doesn't get tattooed by the soup that was in it. Every bowl doesn't turn green when it has split pea soup in it. Doesn't turn black when it's black bean soup in it. Yes? Yet it holds all the soups, but it never gets infected by the qualities of the soup. Yeah? Yet it's the one that allows the soup to be served, to be had. That's what mind is like. It's like clear, open space. Look at the sky. Look at things that appear in the sky. How many things, how many clouds have stabilized and just stay in the sky month after month? Whoa, that thing hasn't moved for 5 years. You know what I mean? No, it doesn't happen. People flying a plane don't run into chunks of sky. The birds, when they shit, it doesn't land on the sky. Yeah? The sky allows all of this to occur, yet it's not affected by any of the occurrences. Lend that idea. It must register something in you. Follow that feeling and let the mind expand on it. Yeah? Let it open up to, hey, to the size of the sky. It's the context of even the sky. The sky can fit in your own mind. Yeah? Why play so small? The only reason why is we haven't entertained the possibility it can be any other way. Well, I'm here to give you a possibility. You are bigger than the freaking sky. This way is perfect, as vast space is perfect, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our grasping and rejecting that we do not know the true nature of things. So how could the true nature of things become, how could the true nature of things become blind to something unless that thing was the true nature of things? I would say the true nature of things would impose their trueness on you. If they, you know, but you, being the reality, can make the true nature of things not seem true. How could it be otherwise? How could it be lent the ability to obscure the reality from the reality unless the reality was in cahoots with it? How could, if that unreality could impose its will on reality, then that's not the reality. Yeah? You've got to see the role we're in here. We're not innocent observers. We're not dropped into this real place. Yeah? We're in cahoots with the whole event. Not as Paul and Tanya, way beyond that. So it is due to our grasping and rejecting that we do not know the true nature of things. So then we would know the true nature of things if the grasping and rejecting lost interest in it. For me, how it works is the mind lost interest in being the one who is grasping and the one who is clinging. It wasn't about getting rid of clinging and grasping. It lost interest because it wasn't me that was clinging and grasping. And it did exactly the thing he's saying would happen, but in that way. Yeah? Just like Ramana says, it's not about giving up your possessions, it's about giving up the possessor. Yeah? It's not about giving up clinging. How could you give up clinging and grasping? That would be clinging and grasping to an idea of giving up clinging and grasping. Self can never get out of self. You're never going to get out of self, selfing. It's not going to happen. You can't use selfing to get out of selfing. If you use selfing to leave the shore to get to the other shore, it's the same shore that you left. You're in selfing. Yeah. Indeed, it is due to our grasping and rejecting that we do not know the true nature of things. Live neither in the entanglement of outer things, nor in ideas or feelings of emptiness. Now, I bet you he's sharing this because this occurred to him. He stopped living in entanglement of outer things, and he stopped having the ideas of feelings of emptiness. So he's now telling you, hey, this is how it downloaded in me. Yeah? Something occurred, and this is a download. I'm sharing it with you. Maybe it will apply. Live neither in the entanglement of outer things, nor in ideas or feelings of emptiness. Ideas or feelings of emptiness. Be serene and at one with things, and because you are. It's not a big stretch. And erroneous views will disappear by themselves. Exactly. Why? How could it disappear by itself? Because it doesn't have any self. It's because you stopped giving it the ability to seem real. It doesn't seem real anymore. Be serene and at one with things, and erroneous views will disappear by themselves. When you try to stop activity to achieve quietude, this is a good one. Mm-hmm. Your very effort fills you with activity. Oops, that door's been closed. This is what he does. He shuts a lot of doors. So then you're left in the room you're in already. Instead of looking for artificial ways out in windows, you get to see. If all those escape hatches are taken away, you find about out the wisdom of no escape. That's what you find out. The wisdom of no escape is that there's no need for escape. So as you remain attached to one extreme or another, you will never know oneness. Those who do not live in the single way cannot be free in either activity or quietude, in assertion or denial. So one opposite isn't going to lead to freedom from the other opposite, yes? You're still in the opposites. Deny the reality of things and you miss their reality. Assert the emptiness of things and you miss their reality. The more you talk and think about it, the further you wander from the truth. So cease attachment to talking and thinking, and there is nothing you will not be able to know. I'd love to do that right now. To stop talking. Yeah? An abbreviated day. To return to the root is to find the essence. Of course. Yeah. But to pursue appearances or enlightenment is to miss the source. To pursue appearances or enlightenment is to miss the source. To awaken even for a moment is to go beyond appearance and emptiness. Changes that seem to occur in the empty world we make real only because of our ignorance. Yeah, of course. Do not seek for the truths, only cease to cherish opinions. Do not remain in a dualistic state. Avoid such easy habits carefully. If you attach even to a trace of this and that, of right and wrong, the mind essence will be lost in confusion. Exactly. So now the dreamer has forgot that it's dreamt it, and it's now in the battle of dealing with all the effects that it's dreamt that are having on it. Yeah? It's called confusion, I would say. Yeah. True. Changes that seem to occur in the energy world, or the empty world, will you make real only because of our ignorance. Do not seek for the truth, only cease to cherish opinions. Do not remain in a dualistic state. Avoid such easy habits carefully. It's a very easy habit to fall into, yeah? In the mind. If you attach even to a trace of this and that, of right and wrong, the mind essence will be lost in confusion. Although all dualities arise from the one, do not be attached even to the idea of this one. When the mind exists undisturbed in the way, there is no objection to anything in the world. And when there is no objection to anything, things cease to be in their old way. In other words, they don't have the juice to screw with you. Yeah? When no discriminating attachment arises, the old mind ceases to exist. The old mind ceases to exist. And then what you call a new mind takes over. Like in AA, they talk about you'll have a new freedom and a new happiness, not another regurgitated old freedom and old happiness, which motivates you to find another old freedom and old happiness, but a new freedom, a new happiness, and a new attitude and a new outlook. Not a better or improved attitude, a new one, totally new. Totally new pair of glasses, in a sense. Yeah? I like that statement. The mind essence will be lost in confusion. Although all dualities arise from the one, do not be attached even to the idea of this one. When the mind exists undisturbed in a way, there is no objection to anything in the world. And then when there's no objection to anything, things cease to be in the old way. When no discriminating attachment arises, the old mind ceases to exist. Let go of things as separate existences, and mind too vanishes. Likewise, when the thinking subject vanishes, so too do the objects created by mind. You see? The arising of other gives rise to self. Giving rise to self generates other. Know these seeming two as facets of the one fundamental reality. In this emptiness, these two are really one, and each contains all phenomena. If not comparing nor attached to refined and vulgar, you will not fall into judgment and opinion. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. Those who rely on limited views are fearless and irresolute, are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. To have a narrow mind and to be attached to getting enlightenment is to lose one's center and go astray. When one is free from attachment, all things are as they are, and there is neither coming nor going. When in harmony with the nature of things, your own fundamental nature, you will walk freely and undisturbed. It's called traveling lighter, eh? I'd say. However, when mind is in bondage, the truth is hidden, and everything is murky and unclear. So if the mind is identified with this idea of being a long-lasting, independent, and separate entity, everything is murky and unclear. It's sort of like being in this room if it was nighttime and someone turned the lights off. A lot of problems would arise in that situation. You wouldn't know where the door was to get out. You wouldn't know where the bathroom was. Yeah, you'd probably bump into people. You'd fall over a chair. You may hurt yourself. And so what do? We sort of hunker down in the darkness. We take it to be real. We buy knee pads and someone's like very entrepreneurial, starts selling maps to where the bathroom is. I saw it one day in the light, and I think if you make a left and a right, you'll get there. It may take a while, but you'll get there. And, you know, you have preemptive apologies for bumping into people instead of just turning on the light. Yeah. As soon as the light came on, all the problems wouldn't have the Petri dish to grow in. Yeah? They would distinguish. They would extinguish. It would be gone. Because they would have no place to grow. They have to grow in that confusion, in that darkness. Yeah? They can't grow in the light. However, when mind is in bondage, the truth is hidden, and everything is murky and unclear, and the burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. What benefit can be derived from attachment to distinctions and separations? If you wish to move in the one way, do not dislike the worlds of senses and ideas. Indeed, to embrace them fully is identical with true enlightenment. The wise person attaches to no goals, but the foolish person fetters himself or herself. There is one Dharma, or one way, without differentiation. Distinctions arise from the clinging needs of the ignorant. To seek mind with a discriminating mind is the greatest of mistakes. That has been echoed quite a lot in early Zen, where they said you can't use mind to seek mind, you can't use the Buddha to seek the Buddha, you can't use light to seek light. Yeah? That's why they say if you see the Buddha in the street, shoot him. Because basically you're throwing your nature of Buddhahood onto them. And that person, or whoever that person is, if it's alive, is going to fail you. It's nice to have dead masters, because then that they're going to behave the way you want them to behave. But live ones are always going to fail you. Because the problem was you threw the Buddha nature of onto them. And then you demand them to be a certain way, so that you can be that way. Yeah. Bereft of the Buddha nature, yet looking for it. Yeah. Rest and unrest derive from illusion. Yes. With enlightenment, attachment to liking and disliking ceases. All dualities come from ignorant inference. They are like dreams, phantoms, hallucinations. It is foolish to try to grasp them. Gain and loss, right and wrong, finally abandon all such thoughts at once. If the eye never sleeps, all dreams will naturally cease. If the mind makes no discriminations, the 10,000 things are as they are, of single essence. Yeah. In Chinese philosophy, they use everything that's manifesting as the 10,000 things. Their idea is the energy, which they call, I think it was Wu. There's the energy, and then the energy starts dancing with itself, and that's called the interplay of yin and yang. And in that dance, the 10,000 things appear to us. We're that energy, And then there's this activity of mind splitting, and now we're thinking we're the subject and there are real objects. And in that, everything now becomes real, the 10,000 things. Maybe now it'd be 8 billion things, yeah? And that's what happens. Keep losing the plane. To know this reality deeply, oh no, this is good, yes. For the realized mind, oh wait a minute. Oh, yes. When movement stops, there is no movement. And when no movement, there is no stopping. When such duality ceases to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. See? When the solution dawns on us, it reveals the problem is inherently imaginary. Then there's no need for the solution. What we're suffering from is the sense of two-ness, and we think oneness is going to be the solution to it. Yeah? But in fact, what the idea of oneness reveals is that there is no two-ness, therefore there's no need for oneness. So when movement stops, there is no movement. And when no movement, there is no stopping. When such duality ceases to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. To this ultimate state, no law or description applies. For the realized mind at one with the way, all self-centered striving ceases. Doubts and irresolutions vanish, and the truth is confirmed in you. Not by you, in you. Yeah. With a single stroke, you are freed from bondage. Because there wasn't any. Yeah. Nothing clings to you, and you hold to nothing. All is empty, clear, self-illuminating. With no need to exert the mind. Here, thinking, feeling, understanding, and imagination are of no value. In this world, as it really is, there is neither self nor other than self. So, because there's a lot of selves trying to become a non-self, but as a self. To know this reality directly is possible only through practicing non-duality. When you live this non-separation, all things manifest the one, and nothing is excluded. Whoever comes to enlightenment, no matter when or where, realizes personally this fundamental source. The Dharma truth has nothing to do with big or small, with time and space. Here, a single thought is as 10,000 years. Not here, not there, but everywhere, always right before your eyes, infinitely large and infinitely small, no difference, for definitions are irrelevant, and no boundaries can be discerned. So likewise with existence and non-existence. Don't waste your time in arguments and discussion, attempting to grasp the ungraspable. Each thing reveals the one manifests as all things. To live in this realization is not to worry about perfection or non-perfection, to put your trust in the heart mind. To put your trust in the heart mind is to live without separation. And in this non-duality, you are one with your life source. Words, words, the way is beyond language. For in it there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. Can you imagine if you matched reality with your giving reality to it? What would it reveal itself? When I was young, things happened to me that caused me to flip out, literally. My grandmother, who I grew up with, who was like a goddess to me, and my father died the same year when I was 9 years old. So I felt, this is a story, but it conveys a message. I had a lot of love to those two people. And so that love was going out. It was no effort. It was just going, especially to my grandmother. And then suddenly the objects that the love was seemingly directed at were gone. You know, I didn't know any idea. I didn't have no idea about death, but you know, person got and you never seen them again. They're not coming back in a week and like that. So it seemed that was a big shock to what was going on and the selfing trying to develop, and it just shut down. Yeah? And then its whole job was to make things that seemed so real, like the death of my grandmother, my father, unreal. That's basically what I've been doing my whole life, is trying to make what I believe to be real unreal, because I didn't want to be affected by that anymore. Yeah? So I lived like that for quite a while, and I fueled it with a lot of drug use and everything like that. Then I got into recovery, and something changed, and for some reason, I got to a point where I was ready to allow all those things I'd been making unreal my whole life to be as real as they wanted to be. Yeah? Like all the shit I was avoiding, I finally stopped and let it land on me. And it was a scary event, you know, just, you know, all the thoughts that come up. And it wasn't an event, it was a process in a way. And it landed on me. And what happened is, when I let them be as real as they wanted to be, they showed me they were unreal. Yeah? And then I realized that my making them, trying to make them unreal, gave them reality. Because I'm the reality. Yeah? I was so busy trying to make them unreal, I made them as real can be. Yeah? They dominated my whole freaking life. So in this case, we're busily making reality unreal, let's say, by our preoccupation with opinions and discriminating mind and this is better, this is worse. All of these ways are basically rooted in one way, which is to make reality unreal and to make what's unreal real. Yeah. Now, can you imagine if you would put that ability to make real onto what's real? It would also reveal something to you. It wouldn't reveal that it's unreal. It would reveal that it's real. Yeah? Your mind would recognize reality as reality. So the two-ness would get to oneness. And in that, it would realize there was never two-ness. But as long as I was pushing things away, trying to make them unreal, they were as real as I can be. As real they could be. And I never got it until I got it. Then I still let them be. They all caught up with me, man. I made my amends. I did all these feelings and all this stuff and the loss and all this. And then they showed their nature, which is unreal. And everything's nature is unreal in that one level, that false reality. They're real because they're coming from what's real. But if I match what's so with what can make things seem so, what is that so-ness going to divulge? It's so. End of story. Finally, the process can stop. You finally hit the right number that matches your number. Your ability to make things so has landed on what's so. The casino stops. You get the jackpot. Yeah. You're the winner. You're the winner. And then winning occurs. Even when you think you're losing, there's winning. It's never, the game is always, you're always winning. That's why a bad situation can be a good situation, a good situation can be a bad situation. Yeah. Because mind is constantly just giving it the meaning it has. And now you've given the mind that's giving everything the meaning it has, its meaning. Yeah? And in that reality will now start influencing your experiences in this place that seems unreal. Yeah? So you'll have an authentic feeling of reality, not from things, but from the no thing. Yeah? And I don't know about you, but when I finally lit on that or landed on that, that was home. That was it became the last answer. And it's been the last answer for quite a while, and I don't see any new supercharged answer coming. It explained everything, but it was nothing that did it. And I'm in just the state of being explained all the time. So this always points out, he talks about these unbelievable states, but that they can be obscured quite easily by you having an opinion. Because you're the unbelievable state. Yeah? How can an opinion block you off from the truth unless it's the truth entertaining the opinion? Yeah? How could it? How could a flimsy opinion block you off from the truth unless it's the reality entertaining and giving that opinion the meaning of being real? And where could that meaning of being real can only come from what's real? It can't come from what's false. Everything now can land. All of it. Yeah. All of it can land at the doorstep. And then you see it. And then you have that sense, not a principled philosophy type sense of emptiness, you get the emptiness of things. You get it. And you actually see what your location is, which is everywhere. You're not a who that's looking. You're the what's looking. Has a pretty strong impact on how you travel here. Yeah? Wouldn't all your looking be revised if you were looking from what you're looking for? Yeah. If you were looking from what you're looking for, it would obviously change the way you're looking. Instead of being bummed out on a Saturday in Toronto, you'd be able to be engaged. You can meet the brightness of the day with your own brightness. You can meet the possibility of the afternoon with your possibility. You'd be located at the exact right moment things are happening, which is seemingly right now. Yeah? You wouldn't be five steps behind or three steps ahead. You'd be right in step with the big parade. Yeah? You'd be on beat. You never go to a band. I remember I saw the Rolling Stones and they're getting really old. They seem to be missing the beat, you know. Their guitar riffs were a little slower and, you know. So I remember it like Gimme Shelter, a lot different than I'm hearing it tonight. You know, a little slow, yeah. That's now you're right in tune. You're right in tune. The notes are hitting and you're right at the note. You're vibrating with it. You're not looking past Saturday, because what are you looking, what's past Saturday? You're not looking behind on Friday, that's freaking gone. It's like this life is like an etch-a-sketch, you know? Just does it, and then you shake it, and then there's an empty screen, and this and that, and shake it, and screen, you know? There's no permanent pictures ever produced. Anything shakes it up, it's all gone again. Watch. Have you ever gone to a movie and at the end they applaud the screen? Very rarely, right? But the screen's what's allowing all the movies to appear. A melodrama, it doesn't drench the screen, you know? Army movie doesn't rip the screen open. It just allows all that's happening on it and very little appreciation. You know? This is sort of about doing that, attending to what's always so instead of what's going on. You have enough to do both. You have enough attention to deal with what's on offer today and still rest in what's always here. Yeah. How could it not be restful in what's always here? Yeah. It's like a couch that's never moved. Yeah. How could it not be restful for your attention and interest to be on what's always here? Of course it would produce rest. Yeah? You never have to be you never have to get up. You never have to be disturbed to move. You'd be able to truly rest. And you would recognize it when the attention and interest lands there. You'll have an unspoken yes. You'll know it. And the only one that needs to recognize it is you. Hopefully these invitations, these meetings help. That's all. That's the only thing. I believe in repetition because people hear the same thing and the 10th time may be the winner, you know? Something dawns on them that didn't dawn on them and they've heard it over and over again. Yeah? And then as soon as it dawns, the mind entertains it. And no matter where you think you may be, if you look at certain aspects of your life, you've grown a lot lighter. And what more do you want? If you are seemingly in this dream and you're dreaming yourself out of it, the dream gets happier. Yeah. Who says we have to rush to the exit? Any questions today? Nice little peaceful state. How could this be produced? You know, just by talking and sitting together. Yeah? In an hour and 20 minutes or so. How could it be produced? There's no fucking way. It's always here, always possible. Yet we have the ability to deny that and to avoid it in time. Can't avoid it forever, but in time your mind can seemingly avoid it. Yeah? And this creates the space for that avoidance and all the reasons for it to be diminished. And then that it's like a clearing of a weather front. There's like a mental, emotional weather front that's blocking the sun. You get some light, enough to think like you're seeing. But it's nice when the weather front lifts, you know? You don't even notice it, but then the whole day gets a little brighter. Yeah, a little more light coming. You wouldn't see it because it seems to be incrementally happening, but there is a response in you. Something knows it's happening. You feel better, you know, your attitude gets better. And it's just opening up. That's what it's like. Instead of taking yourself as being what's affected and dependent on the position of the clouds to see the sun, you now sense yourself to be on the sun side. Yeah? The clouds are still seen, but now from this point of view, they can't block you from the sun. From this point of view, they can block you from the sun. Yeah? They don't have the ability to truly block. The ability they seem to have is based on you. This is the message of these things, yeah? If you're here, the cloud has no ability to block you. If you're here, it seems to have an incredible ability to block you from the sun, yeah? But it's not determined by the cloud, it's determined by you and I. To me, that's the utmost responsibility of this place. Not to be cash register honest, that's fine, but the true responsibility of what your role is here. Yeah? To wait for someone to save you, to believe someone has something you don't have, is erroneous thinking, to tell you the truth, big time. Yeah? I can't depend on somebody that I may not see, you know, once a year. Fuck that. I want to have it always available at all times, right where I am. And this is the case. Yeah? No one's going to reveal reality to you. They'll reveal what's unreal as not you, and that's the reality. Yeah? And if you lose interest in the head, when it starts trying to claim it, you won't listen to it. You'll have an immunity to it. You'll hear it because there's consciousness, but you won't listen. It's a totally different experience. Yeah, it will try to come through the skylight, the back door, to claim it. It has a parasitical nature. It's not going to change its stripes. It's going to try to take advantage with everything it comes in contact. Even this message does quite a good job of it. Yeah? But if you're not beholden to those thoughts as being the thinker of them, then the thoughts will lose sway in your life because the sway comes from you, given to the thought by being the thinker of it. Yeah. If the thinker is denied, then that distribution of meaning gets cut off. Yeah. Sort of like the thought doesn't have any power; it just drops in midair. Doesn't have any ability to continue itself because it doesn't have your juice to push it along. Yeah? It doesn't have its own power. The thought has a power given to it by us through the identification as being the thinker. How else could it get power? How else could a thought screw with you and ruin your day? And the same thought, if I'm in good shape, has no effect on me. Obviously, the effect isn't from the thought, it's from the mind that thinks it's having it. Yeah? It always comes back to us. The true responsibility of this life is on us, in a way. Yeah? I found it empowering. The whole drive for blaming got dismissed. A lot of things just sloughed off, like dead skin coming off a live body. I wasn't picking at it because I realized my job is just to lay on the operating table and not take myself to be the doctor. And just life works on you. Yeah. Things get removed that need to be removed. Things get added on temporarily that need to be added on, like for this seat assignment. And yet, you're basically, your primary state is incredibly empty. It's very cool. Yeah. Don't have a wealth of information. You just have it when you need it, like doing a talk. Yeah. I don't go think about this during the day, usually. I've got many, much better things to think about than this. Things that are worthy of being thought about. This doesn't, you do it a disservice by thinking about it, really. It's yeah, it's much different. It's entertaining, yeah. It's the mind entertaining, like a live cam of nothing. You know, like a surveillance camera that sees nothing all day, 24 hours a day. You can't believe how interesting it can be. It's very enthralling, it is. Yeah. I'm having a blast. It's fun, eh? It's nice to entertain these ideas. It leavens the load, bro. You know? There's a rule 62 in recovery says, don't take yourself so seriously. When you're not that, you lose interest in it big time.
Yeah.
You really do. You lose interest in what's inferring it and assuming it and implying it. And therefore, the ability to assume, imply, and infer gets weakened because it's your juice. It has no juice in and of itself. Nothing has any juice here other than you. Yeah? So, let's go, eh? We can go eat somewhere. Right? What time we start again, Rob?
What time is it at?
I hope it's 3. Remember, this is spiritual time, so add an hour to every hour, because you're getting a lot more out of the moments.
Start at 10 to 2?
All right, 2.
2.
All right. 10 to 2, yeah.
Daylight saving is a spiritual thing.
Good, bro. Good to see you.
How's well?
In the world?
I'm not doing any right now.
Why not?
Because I'm here.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's good. Yeah. How warm is your day?
What a wonderful day you are.
Well, it's always cold, but relatively warm.
Like the movie Chasing Back?
I have seen it, yeah. No, I didn't see that movie. But I've seen a lot of big wave
movies.
Is it good? Chasing? It's shot right near where I live.
Yeah.
Well, do we need to turn off your recorder?
Oh, yeah.